Ladies and gentlemen, podcasting since 2005, you're listening to Gamertag Radio with your host, podcaster Hall of Famer Danny Pena, the always opinionated Paris Lilly, and from outside of the norm, Peter Toledo. This is Gamertag Radio.
This is Danny Pena, founder and co-host of Gamertag Radio. I just got back from my trip. I traveled to Washington, D.C. for the first time. And this is for the Division II press event. It was very inspiring going over there, learning about the history of Washington, D.C., and learning a lot about our country. Over there, we had the developers from Massive at the event, and they were showing us around different locations of certain missions from the game, and they will also show us like why they were inspired to design that location or venue or spots from Washington, D.C. into the game. One of the first places that we went to as a group was, of course, we got to check out the game hands-on. This was like the final build. But then after that, we went to the Air and Space Museum, where Chatty, the associate creative director, gave us a tour about the museum.
So my first objective was really to visit most of the places that I've already identified on the internet that would fit for a main mission. Now, what I was looking at when doing that research, first thing that is obvious is having a building that is big enough to host the main mission. The next part of picking those locations was to... So it's a process we go through for every single location that we use in the game. We have a sort of a three-step process where we first look at what the place is in real life, what is its purpose, what would be its purpose in the days of crisis such as we have in the game, and for the Division 2, 7 months after that, how would they evolve? So when you look at it, first thing, it's a museum, so you wouldn't think that it could be useful for a crisis. But the first feeling we had when we got in that place is that it's like a theme park. You know, a lot of toys around us, and we just wanted to blow those toys. So when you will play the mission, there will be a lot of explosions around the place. I talked with the lady that welcomed us here. She was worried that we would destroy too much things, but there's only the space shuttle that we destroyed. We kept all the other artifacts intact. We, based on the research that we did, the whole mall area during the World War II was used for military temporary barracks and ammunition stockpiles. So we decided to make this place one of the government's military staging area held by the JTF, which is our task force that tried to control the situation. And so they started to stockpile a lot of useful materials for them to try to handle that crisis. And after that period, when shit hit the fan and when all the factions started to take over the city, the Trusons took advantage of what was already here, so the military equipment, and also anything that they could scavenge here to turn it into their very own munition factory. And that's where they started to craft some of their weapons, some of very powerful weapons that will be found in other missions in the game. I'm not spoiling the whole story right now. And basically your mission when you get here is to destroy everything that allow them to craft all of those things that can harm the civilians. So actually, the place where the main entrance you went through is the end of the mission where you fight the final boss. So what we did is that there's a whole scavenging area outside where you can see that Trusons have pulled out everything they didn't need after they scavenged the useful part that they could repurpose. So you get into that courtyard, you infiltrate the building from the basement, and you get inside the building from the first hall over there that is closed, so you didn't visit it today. But now the flow, after that, the flow takes you through that exact catwalk here. There is a very exotic part before that that unfortunately you hadn't a chance to see today, which is the planetarium. And the planetarium is a nice part of the mission where you get a very different feeling because you still have all of the audio of the show that is running. You have all the lights, the stars around you. So it's a very very nice part of that mission that I like very much. And then you come here, you go down, you destroy all of their workbenches, and you do the final boss fight in the main. So the building is recreated on a 1-to-1 scale. I think it's one, like, all of them are recreated 1-to-1, but we had to take more or less liberties with other places. This one is, I think, really one of the places that is the closest to reality. We managed to do that by bringing in the team, taking a lot of pictures, even of the carpets, of all the different materials, trying to stick as much as possible to the reality. And you have also on Google Map, this area has very detailed map. When you zoom in, you can see all the layout of the different rooms. So that was, I would say it was the hardest one to recreate, but that's a part of the reason why it's so faithful to its real life version.
But that wasn't it. Right after that, we also visited an artist, a graffiti artist, that is also from Washington, D.C. He was also part of this project and worked on a lot of graffiti in the game. And they show us the studio. They give us a studio tour. You got to see like all his paintings. And it was very cool seeing this because, you know, I'm a huge graffiti fan from way back, you know, part of the hip-hop culture. And it was good to learn about other graffiti artists outside of Miami, outside of New York City. And there was an introduction about him and why he was involved in the game.
I'm a lead environment artist on the Division 2, as I was on the Division, the first one. And so just quickly, what environment artists do on the project is we build the environment. We're construction workers and architects and designers kind of rolled into one. So any interiors and exteriors you see, we've thought about how to build it and we've gone to the trouble of sweating over the details and propping the whole world and telling those stories. So as part of that, we're placing these original artworks from Kelly and other street artists. And the graffiti work and street artwork provides a real punch of color and culture to the environment, as you can see in screenshots, for example, to environments that can otherwise be quite monotonous. And the great thing is that's how they work in the real world as well. So in the Division, we had an approach that we carried over into the Division 2, and that was to reach out to real-world street artists like Kelly and ask them to role-play within the fantasy of the game world. So imagine mid-crisis Manhattan, imagine post-collapse DC, and what would you say, what would you do, where would you put that work? The graffiti work, it provides commentary, resistance, of course, humor, surprise. It connects to youth culture and music culture, as well as community. And what we're doing in asking for this original artwork is offering, I think, an exhibition platform for active street artists. So they can consider meaningfully within the context of the fantasy of the game what they want to show to literally millions of players around the globe. So one thing we tried to do in particular in Division 2 was to, as environment artists, was to give context to the work, to look at the content in the work. What I mean by that is, for example, if you go to the World Bank in DC in the game, you'll see a graffiti there that features an Earth as part of the design. So we look at the connections we can make, and then we try and prop spray cans, splashes of paint, ropes and ladders and things that might have been used to put the work up to make it feel grounded and logical and believable. So the Division began a story in New York City, and as a natural outcome of the research that we do into these projects, we shone a spotlight and gave special attention to graffiti and graffiti artists, because that's such an important part of the cultural history of that city and the visual landscape. So DC is quite different, of course. I mean, most cities are compared to New York, and graffiti, it's quite unique there. But I think, as Kelly will probably talk about, there's still a very interesting history of community murals and the like here in DC, and we tried to consider that in our representation of graffiti in Division 2 by, as I was describing, you have this bright, fresh punch of color and culture with the new work versus slightly faded wall murals that have been starting to be reclaimed by the kudzu and the natural environment pre-pandemic DC. Enough of me. Kelly Taos, director of POWWOW DC.
Got it.
International Graffiti Street Art Music Cultural Festival. You can follow Kelly and all the usual suspects online. Take it away.
Thank you. Really, thank you for honoring me and letting me be in the game. Like, I'm really, really ecstatic. Like, that's to say at the very least. To get that kind of exposure and on that level, and to like just be in front of millions of players, is really, really huge, and that's profound. And like, it means a lot to me, especially as an artist coming from BC, because, like you said, like there's New York culture, and there's all these things, but like New York and San Francisco and anywhere else in the world, they have these monoliths of graffiti and street art and everything like that. In DC, we're kind of like, we're the underdogs, as it would be. Like, we have pretty blank slate. You guys have been out around a lot today, and there's like not much, and it's not that people aren't going out and doing it. It's just that there's that culture of things that are going on in the city, and we haven't really, I think, become a metropolitan city until the last like kind of 10 years. It's really been a kind of a weird renaissance for us, as it would be, because in the past 20 years, we used to be like murder capital. It was really crazy. Like, I've been in DC proper for 20 years, and like, it's completely flipped on its head. But that being said, the flipping gives us new canvases and new things, and I've seen that as great opportunities to jump in and become, you know, a voice for my community as it is creatively, if I can. So that being said, I am an artist first and foremost, and then I actually became director of POWWOW DC. We are a sister festival of POWWOW Hawaii. POWWOW Hawaii started around 10 years ago in Hawaii. They literally just popped off this February. People like Shepherd Fairey, Logan Hicks, Howan Awesome, they're all there crushing it. And then we have festivals in Japan, Taipei, Rotterdam. We're picking up Venice, Valencia. So we truly are an international mural festival. But it's the best thing in the world for me, because our whole goal is to beautify the community. Much like in the game, we do as the best as we can to make it better. And that is the simple purpose of it. That being said, selfishly, I get to bring my idols, my peers, the people I get to work with to the city to let them put up such as that there, like on blank walls, or even a lot of the things that I can't get brand new buildings. I get buildings that are going to be torn down, that are busted up, and literally we'll get them for like 3 months and boom, they're gone. But it's pretty much the act. It's the act of creation. It's the act of working in here. And it's the act of bringing our community together to celebrate something beautiful. And that's really how I fully see this and come back to this, is that where all these people go on, they're gamers and they have this great giant culture. It's the same thing as DC. It hasn't been a real giant long time that gamers have built up this community. Like, realistically, think about it. Like, what, 10, 12 years? How many people have had headphones and been able to talk to other people around the world while they're playing? It's insane. It's the same thing with Instagram and all these other people. So being able to share their culture, being able to work together and progress is something I'm really, really proud to be a part of.
So we started a very early tour, and this is a guided CD tour. So we went all over the place. We went to Lincoln Memorial, Washington Monument, the National Archives, and a couple of the places too in the city. So here, before we went to this spot, to the Lincoln Memorial. They took us the day before. They took us to the U.S. Capitol, and that was a very inspiring tour for me. I had a great time going to that tour, right? And one of the moments that I realized I need to ask Julian about this. They took us to the Capitol tour, right? And then there was the balcony where, for those who don't know, every time there's a president inauguration, the president always comes out through there and speak to the people during the inauguration. And we walked through the balcony, and when I got to see the vision, like the view, when I got to see the view of the balcony, I felt like that was like a very powerful moment. Like I can imagine a president walking through here and seeing that now you are president of the United States of America. So when we went to the Lincoln Memorial, you know, Julian and his team had a little introduction there. And then I had a conversation with Julian about this. But first, I want to play you the audio of them talking about the Lincoln Memorial. And from there, we're going to sit down and talk to Julian.
So this is the first time I do a tour. But just to reset the context, RDC is slightly different. The Washington Monument has also been transformed, and we'll be going over there a little bit later on to discuss what it's been transformed into. But this location here has become one of the most strategically important places in the city. And the faction that's holding it are the True Sons, and they're holding it because of the Memorial Bridge.
All right, so we're live here in Washington, D.C. Actually, this is my first time here. And I have the creative director of the Division 2, Julian, man. Welcome back. We had you already a couple times on our podcast,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, and I told you the last time, you hold a special place for me because this was my first interview at E3.
Yes.
The first time I talked to anybody about the Division 2. So I have only love for you guys.
Yeah, no, to me, that was like a very special moment because we were like super excited. We just found out everything about the game. And that was a great conversation at that time, man. So, like, how was it for you work on this game, like traveling here to Washington, D.C., finding out more like about the history, the locations? Like, how was the process when you first started developing the game?
So Ubisoft really believes in going to places that we're recreating to to see what it's really like. So we're not just designing or developing from Google Maps or movies or cinematic references. We actually go and smell the grass, where we pound the streets, we have a look at what makes the city work and tick. And for me, it's incredibly important. And it's incredibly important not just for me, but for as many people on the team as possible. So Chloe, that you've probably met, our head of research, she's amazing at being able to synthesize those things. And she's actually working with a tool called the WTF, World Texture Facility,
okay,
which is incredibly detailed. And it holds articles on hundreds of different subjects, from how the city is structured to the little secrets, how Mason influences structured the city to the different people who are incredibly important in its organization. So all of these things are incredibly researched, and it adds that little detail and those little touches that make a difference between a good game and a great game.
Now, while doing that, during the research, did the story change from like the campaign based on that, on the research, or while developing the game, or not?
So I like to see story as several different layers, especially in a game like ours, which is, you know, open world, non-linear, co-op focused. The linear sort of story is that's fixed, right? But it's the more detailed and let's say things that you'd miss if you don't really pay attention, the environmental storytelling. Mm-hmm. Now that we can lean in to and really change with the people we meet, the places that we go to, what we see, and how people can inform us on how the city would have collapsed at the end of the day. So different levels of story because of the complexities of the game. Mm-hmm. But in general, you know, it really informed that layer of environmental storytelling that we have.
Yeah, like going to the U.S. Capitol, they took us outside to the balcony.
Yeah.
Right? And I went outside. I felt like a very powerful moment just being there. So I can imagine all the presidents coming out through there, right? Is that also, like for you guys, did that inspire you to add things in the game or maybe story-wise too or something because of like places, locations like that or not?
I think this city really exudes power. You know, you've mm-hmm. been downtown. The buildings there are massive. They're huge, and they're meant to make you feel insignificant. Mm-hmm. You know, they're meant to be towering over you. Mm-hmm. I think that idea of power and of freedom and dignity, like we heard there, those are important values for the division, and mm-hmm. very much intertwined in the civilians, the settlements, taking back the city and taking back the country. Mm-hmm. Those are things that really spoke to us too.
I know during your presentation, you mentioned about new locations. Is it new locations outside of DC, or are you guys just going to focus a lot more just the city?
So. I wish I could tell you.
Okay. The reason why I asked that, because like this is the first time that you guys are adding raids in the game, right?
Yes.
So it could be challenging because it's now 8 players playing, right? So what if the location is too small or is too big?
100%.
So how that would work, you know, like
the raid, because of the complexity of creating something that's 8 players, mm-hmm. because of the space that we need, all of the things that you were saying, mm-hmm. we need to do that outside of the map that I showed you. So mm-hmm. that's going to be somewhere else.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. All right, not too much. I wouldn't be surprised. But I don't know. I'm very excited about the game. I just love the location. I think it's perfect for this game, man. Like, what was one of the things that you guys learned so far that being here in the city that you didn't even know before coming to Washington, D.C.?
There's so much. I mean, there is so much. We're video game developers. Mm-hmm. So when you come to a city, any city, mm-hmm. there's so much to learn. I mean, I'd been to Washington, D.C. once before, but I forgot how big and monumental this sort of the mall is. I forgot mm-hmm. how impressive and powerful the Lincoln Memorial is. Mm-hmm. So when you look at all of these things, that really cements what you can do in the game with it too. And mm-hmm. it all informs the experience that we're going to be able to deliver.
I know you mentioned about factions. Mm. Why have certain factions in different location? Is there a story behind that? Or why those locations for each one of them?
There's story reasons for it, but there's also player flow and game structure reasons for it too. Mm-hmm. Each one of the factions has a stronghold. Basically mm-hmm. their fort, their base of operations. And we needed to have them in different locations to introduce you to them gradually and have you take each one of those strongholds down eventually at the end of the game.
Okay, okay. Well, I know there's music that's very popular here in Washington, D.C. from way back, go-go music.
Yes.
Right? I was thinking, like, that would be cool to have, like, maybe the civilians listening to go-go, because at the same time there's people that never been to DC they were learning the history about the music culture here and everything, you know. Do you guys thought about that, like
so you know, are you talking about something like in one of the settlements?
Yes.
When you upgrade it, you know, they
or in the basin, or it could be also in the basin operations too, like why not, like them listening to the radio, because
or even maybe you know, picking up instruments and starting a band.
Yeah, right, that would be awesome. That's awesome. All right, Julie, man. Anything else, man?
That's what we do.
Paris wish he would have been here, man. Like, he has a lot. He sent me some questions.
Oh,
so I'm like, all right, sorry. But next time, hopefully in the future, we can have you back on the show.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, and congratulations. I'm excited for the game, man.
All right. So. Thank you very much.
All right, cool, man. Thanks, man.
Send us your feedback or questions. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
It was insane going all over Washington, D.C. And of course, I asked Julian about go-go music. I think that's something that a lot of people don't know. This genre of music was created like over 30, 35 years ago in Washington, D.C. I heard about this when I was in high school at that time. So it was very cool that they ended the whole press event at a winery where they were playing, a band was playing go-go music for like a good 40 minutes or so. And it was a lot of fun. I was there with Andy Irene from What's Good Games, the Ubisoft team, Massive team, other podcasters, content creators. It was a lot of fun. So I'm going to play a short snippet of go-go music because it's also in the game. If you listen to the conversation I had with Julian, I asked him about that.
I could have sworn it was a bank right here on V Street. I guess that's the bank. It looks dank. I know my house used to be right here. I can't seem to get
it. Now, going back to the studio where we got to play the game and there was also presentation panels, I had to talk to Chatty about, he's the associate creative director of the Division 2. Because, you know, we bumped into each other a couple times during the event, but I really wanted to talk to him about the same thing I asked Julian about the locations and was there anything new that they learned that they didn't know about Washington, D.C.?
My name is Shadi El-Zibawi, and I'm the associate creative director for the Division 2.
Talk about the process of, because we were talking behind the scenes about the locations and everything, and I know one spot that got me the attention the most was the Air and Space, right? You can talk about how was the process of selecting the locations for the game.
So I did a trip to DC in 2017 that was 100% focused on identifying those locations and validating them for the main missions. So it started a few months before I flew to DC. I started with the map and internet and, you know, like the basic means of research. And I've identified a few spots I wanted to see by myself to make sure that they were a good fit. So once I had those locations, I flew to DC. I spent 10 days here and I spent a day almost in each of those locations. And really, I was looking for different things. First obvious thing is to have a location that is good enough for a mission so that it's a big environment that is flexible enough. But what is also very important to me is it has to feel DC. So every location that we pick, we're like, okay, is it DC enough? So here, things that come up first are museums, governmental areas, and then of course we look for more variety. But the Air and Space in particular is a museum, and that's something that is very present in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, I mean, some locations are pretty big and some are small. Because of that, you guys change the design of that particular areas too? Because of the size of the location?
Yeah, so we have, of course, you know, we have some constraint to select the location. We have a flow in the world. We need to keep some balance in players' progression. So sometimes we end up needing to find a location in a certain neighborhood, and in some of those cases, we don't have like a huge building such as the Air and Space Museum, for instance. So we take a bit more liberty with those. We extend the mission. You know, sometimes it's going to start in the area around before you go into a building. We tried also to pick locations that had exterior areas. So we have a mission in the Red Cross building, but the Red Cross building is something very small, but it has a huge courtyard around. So, you know, taking that whole compound was good enough for the mission. And then there's the first side of that research, which is looking at the location in real life. What's its purpose? How can we make sense of repurposing of this when the crisis starts? And what would happen 7 months after when our game actually takes place?
Now, like the White House, the base of operations, why the White House and not like other Why? Location. Yeah, I mean, I know really? It's very iconic. It's very iconic, but I'm just
yeah,
saying,
yeah.
Just...
It's you know, the in every city in our lore, the division has a HQ. Mm-hmm. This one is like let's say the mother of them all. Mm-hmm. And when we picked up Washington DC, there was no question. It had to be the White House. The other reason also is that it's central to the map, so it helps us with the progression of the player. You know, when you have to come back and everything resonates from that location.
Yeah, you taking a tour inside the White House?
I wasn't part of this trip.
Okay,
but the guys here, I think the three of us did that tour.
Yeah, because I mean, I know we went to a couple buildings and they were very strict about taking pictures and taking video cameras. So how was that? Like, how was it for you guys to get, you know, the design of the location based on that? Because if they're too strict, then how are you gonna, you know?
Really depends on the locations. For instance, the Air and Space Museum. Just looking on Google Map, you can zoom in and you really have all the rooms. So you have the complete blueprint of the public areas. Other areas, you know, it's taking pictures when we're allowed to. And when we are recreating some behind the scenes parts where we couldn't have access, it's a true design process. You know, we have people who have architecture knowledge, and based on the public space which they were able to access to, they can expand that to make a consistent whole.
You want to mention a couple of locations that we visited and so far?
Yeah, so for instance, we went to the National Archive this morning.
And that was a very interesting one. Yeah. That was really good. Yeah,
and have you seen there's a public area and there's a research area where we don't have access? So the research area that you will go through in the mission is something that we imagined based on what we knew, but it's not one-to-one on that side. However, the rotunda, that is public space, even though we couldn't take pictures, as you've seen, it's recreated as it is in real life.
Interesting, man. And what were the things that you have learned so far since working on this project about Washington, D.C., that you didn't know before?
Wow. That's a big one. Yeah. That I didn't know before. A lot of stuff. I think what I can say, I had a very memorable experience when I came here because I was there for the 4th of July. So... I was on the mall on the 3rd of July, and you know, it was like empty, few people having picnics and, you know, a good time on the mall. And the day after, there were 700,000 people. And that was something very, very impressive that I still have great memories of. There's a lot of stuff. A very concrete example regarding the National Archive, for instance. So you have those very important documents like the Bill of Rights, Declaration of Independence, and the Constitution. And something I learned while doing the research is, in case of catastrophe, those documents are sucked into a vault, into a bulletproof... they're already in a bulletproof case, and they're sucked into a bunker that... in theory, should resist to any attack, so it survives anything. I'm not sure it's still the protocol today, but at the time, that was the information we managed to get.
Yeah, I know when we were at the Air and Space Museum, I noticed there was a lot of glass. So I know you mentioned that design-wise, you guys didn't want to take away the attention this from inside of like during the mission.
Yeah.
Why the change? Why you guys decided to do that instead of having it open exactly how it is, the museum?
One of the reasons is, you know, the True Sons have taken over that building. They're doing this stuff here. They've turned it into a very strategic location for them, so they had to protect from the outside. So they reinforced, you know, all the easy access inside of the building. And then, you know, we always have some technical compromise that we need to do. But still, we wanted to keep as much open... areas as possible for the light to come in and give different ambience, different depending on the time of day.
So I know it's real location, right? DC. We went to eat lunch, right? What was the name of the location?
Ben's Chili Bowl.
Is that in the game? No, if I walk through, would I? No? Okay. No. All right. I was curious if we will see that.
No. This one is more like part of the culture of DC and all that research that we did, you know, meeting with musicians, artists. Mm-hmm. But we have others. There is a very famous place that is right across the Ford Theater, which is the Ford Theater in our game, is one of the civilian settlements. In front of it, there is a place that is quite known in the city called the Lincoln Waffle, like a breakfast dinner place. And I went there when I did the trip, and when we had the city recreated, one of my first thing I did was, okay, let's look if the guys recreated it and mm-hmm. found it, same color, same, not the same branding. For mm-hmm. legal reason, of course, we're changing the branding, but mm-hmm. any place you have a restaurant in real life, you have one in the game, you have a store, mm-hmm. You can really have a direct comparison even of the architecture of the buildings. We try to stick as much as possible to reality.
Now, the dark zones, they're in a totally different locations in the Washington, D.C. Why you guys decided to choose those low locations for dark zones?
So there are two reasons. Mm-hmm. One is very practical. In the first game, you know, the dark zone was a huge area that would split the map. And, you know, it was the first game, and you can always improve when you do sequels. Mm-hmm. And we realized that it was not the most... It didn't help create the most fluid progression for players. So having them a bit more on the sides of the map allow us to, you know, when you will progress during the campaign, you will get introduced progressively to those dark zones, because you will always at some point come close to them, and that's when, you know, we'll have introduction missions to try to push you to explore those locations. Mm-hmm. And the other reason, which is a pure design reason, is we get variety from those locations, as you know, they're quite far from each other, and the city is very varied. So we just benefit from the variety of those locations in terms of ambience, of gameplay. Mm-hmm. So that was really a win for us.
I don't want you to say much because I want to be surprised, but was it the same thing when you guys started working on like raids? It was the same process too? Like, okay, we got to pick like the right location for this that makes sense for this, because, and I had this conversation with Julian, mm-hmm. you know, if the location is, let's say, small, and there's eight players, it's not going to make no sense to have. So how was that process? Like, we have to select without naming what it is or anything like that. I want to be surprised.
Yeah, actually, right? You have hints of it in one of the latest trailer that we released. Well, I'm actually driving the team in ANSI that is designing the raids. Mm-hmm. And the process here, one of the thing I wanted is to come up with first a location that you've never seen in the Division. So mm-hmm. something that is completely different from what you see in the first game or even in that game. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, as you said, we have eight players, so we need a location that is big enough. Mm-hmm. Everyone is expecting, when you say raids to people, you know, there are things that comes to your mind, mostly epicness and, you know, exotic mechanics and mm-hmm. new things that you didn't see. So we really wanted to make sure to hit all of those notes.
All right, just want to say thanks. It was fun. Been having a great time on this trip, man. And plus, at the same time, I learned a lot about the progress. How was it like developing the game, picking the locations and everything too? So it was cool.
Cool,
man.
Thank you.
All right, cool.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
That's about it. It's a lot of fun being there at the event. I had a great, great time. It was cool hanging out with all the content creators, the media there, and just learning a lot about Washington, D.C. I highly recommend it, man. For those that have never been there before, go over there for a couple of days, check it out. And also, if you get the chance, go to the historic Ben's Chili Bowl. Oh, my God. That food is amazing. We went there during lunch, and it was really cool going inside. You get to see all those pictures of celebrities, presidents, politicians, just people from music that have been there and also ate at that place, Ben's Chili Bowl. Highly recommend it. His wife was there, and she spoke to us for a good couple minutes, and she gave us a little history about the restaurant, and also she told us, like, once you guys are finished eating, go outside and check out our graffiti. There's a lot of history there, too. So it was very, very cool. And that's about it. Just want to say that there was a lot of fun recording this during my trip. Shout out to the Gamertag Radio listeners that live locally or near Washington, D.C. I did a quick little meetup over there, and that was a lot of fun. We talked about, you know, about the podcast and just the gaming community overall there. And it was a lot of fun, man. So that's it. I'm going to wrap it up here. Head over to gamertagradio.com, post your comments and feedback, and also listen to our past episode If you get the chance, subscribe, post a review. We're everywhere. You can find us on Spotify, TuneIn Radio, Apple Podcasts. We're everywhere. Just subscribe and share it with your friends. All right, until next time, I'm out. Take care. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.